All right, let's jump into another deep dive. Today, we're tackling the Book of Judges.
Oh, judges.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right?
Yeah.
Kind of wild.
Uh-huh.
This part of the Bible, it's got these incredible
It
stories.
does.
So we're going to look at some of those characters and their stories, and of course, the theological themes that are all through it. You've brought some stuff with you.
I have, yeah.
You've got some excerpts from a lecture by Robert Vannoy.
That's right.
I'm excited to dig into this.
Me too.
So get ready, everybody. We're going to uncover some surprising insights about faith, about leadership, and about how God works,
Yes.
even when things get, a little complicated.
It doesn't shy away from the human side of
Yeah,
things.
it does not.
Does not. Even when it comes to those who are, chosen to lead God's people.
Yeah. Okay, so let's unpack that a little bit. One of the first things that I think always jumps out in Judges is this cyclical pattern, right? The Israelites turn away from God, trouble hits, they cry out for help, and then God raises up these deliverers, these judges.
That's a dance.
Yeah, it's like this repeating thing
Oh,
over and over.
repeating, yeah.
But and through it all, you see God's faithfulness.
Yes, you do. And that's one of the things that Vannoy points out in his lecture, is
Yeah.
that God never abandons them,
Right.
even when they are like deep in idolatry.
Right,
It
yeah.
makes you think about how we often view God's love, that we have to earn it. But Judges shows us a different side.
You're saying that God's grace is there even when people are actively rebelling.
That's right.
I mean, that kind of flips the script on how we usually think about this cycle.
Yeah, I think it does. It suggests that God's faithfulness isn't a reward for good behavior,
Yeah.
but it's part of who he is.
It's like this unconditional love. It's a pretty radical idea,
Yeah.
even now,
Yes.
thousands of years after this was written.
Sorry.
It makes you rethink that whole cause and effect. But before we go too deep into the theology here, I gotta ask, is that even the right word?
That's a great question. Because the Hebrew word that's used actually kind of paints a picture more of a tribal leader or a deliverer
Oh, okay.
than someone sitting in a courtroom.
So we're talking more like warrior chieftains
Exactly.
leading the charge.
Yeah, figures who rallied and guided the people through really, really turbulent times.
Interesting. Okay. And speaking of rallying people, let's talk about Deborah.
Oh, yeah.
Here we have this woman who just defies all
She
expectations,
does.
a prophetess and a judge at a time when women, I mean, they weren't exactly leading armies.
No, not at all. And her story is especially powerful because she fully embraces this leadership role and
Yeah.
she relies on God's guidance every step of the way.
But there's this dynamic, though, between her and Barak, right?
Yes.
He's the one called to fight against this Canaanite king, Jabin.
Right.
But he insists Deborah go with him. What is that about? Did he just need a little spiritual pep talk?
Well, I think Barak recognized Deborah's authority
Okay.
and knew that her presence would have a huge impact on the troops. Yeah.
All right, but here's where it gets really interesting, right?
Okay.
Deborah prophesies that the victory won't ultimately go to Barak. A
Okay.
woman's gonna deliver the final blow.
That's what she says, yeah.
I mean, you'd think Deborah, she's gonna lead the charge herself, right?
Yeah, that's what you'd think.
But the story takes this very unexpected turn.
It does, yes.
Enter Jael,
Tail.
the wife of Heber.
Right.
She's not a soldier,
Right.
not even part of the Israelite army,
No.
but she ends up taking down this enemy general,
Yeah.
Sisera, in this crazy way that you would never, I mean, you just wouldn't see coming.
Right,
It's
exactly.
such a stark reminder that God can use anybody, right? Like, it
Yes.
doesn't matter their background, their social standing, to achieve his purposes.
That's right, that's right.
And that victory song that follows, I mean, talk about vivid imagery.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, Deborah really paints this picture of Jael driving that tent peg through Sisera's temple.
Yeah.
Really makes you realize just how high the stakes were.
And that the fight for freedom wasn't always pretty.
No, it was not. Okay, from one unlikely hero to another.
Okay.
Let's talk about Gideon. This is a story I think a lot of us can relate to on a personal level.
Yeah, I think so too. It
Yeah.
definitely speaks to that experience of self-doubt, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Even when we're called to do great things, those feelings of inadequacy can creep in.
Yeah. So when God calls Gideon to deliver Israel from the Midianites, his first reaction is just pure human nature. Wait, me? are you sure you got the right person? I mean, haven't we all felt that at some point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Facing some kind of challenge that just feels way bigger than us.
Uh-huh.
And then there's that whole fleece test.
Yeah, yeah.
People see that as him trying to figure out God's will.
Right.
But the lecture, I thought this was really cool. The lecture presents a different take.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. So what's the real story with the fleece?
Well, it's not about God proving himself to Gideon.
Okay.
It's about Gideon struggling to reconcile his own doubts with the promises that God has given him.
Oh, interesting.
And it makes you wonder, you know, how often do we ask for these extra reassurances, even when we've already witnessed God's power?
It's that human need for certainty, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, we want to be absolutely sure
right.
before we take that leap of faith.
Uh-huh.
And Gideon's story kind of reminds us that faith isn't just about, you know, blind obedience. It's
right.
it's a relationship.
Yes.
It's a conversation with God.
Yeah.
Sometimes it means questioning, seeking confirmation.
Right.
You know, wrestling with those doubts.
Absolutely.
And then we have this moment where God tells Gideon to shrink his army.
Oh, yeah.
From thousands.
Right.
Down to 300 men.
That's right.
I always wonder, like, what's the logic there?
Well, I think God had a very specific strategy in mind. He wanted to ensure that when victory came, there would be no question
mm-hmm.
that it was his doing.
Right.
Not just a display of human might.
So God's like leveling the playing field.
Yes.
Saying, I'm going to use this small, insignificant group to do something extraordinary.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it also highlights the importance of obedience.
Yeah.
Even when God's instructions seem completely baffling.
And baffling they were. Gideon and these men, they sneak into this Midianite camp at night.
At night.
Armed with trumpets and torches and empty jars.
Big joy.
Like something out of a movie, this ragtag group using these crazy tactics mm-hmm. just to create this chaos and confusion.
Right.
But then things take a dark turn with Gideon.
Yeah.
After the battle, he goes after these Israelites in Sukkoth.
Right.
Who refuse to help him. And his punishment is, well, let's just say it was pretty harsh. Makes you wonder, where's the line, right?
Uh-huh.
Between righteous anger and going too far.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a reminder that leadership is complex.
Yeah.
And even those who achieve great victories can struggle with the temptations of power.
Right. And then you have that moment when the Israelites, they offer Gideon, you know, they're riding high on the wave of victory. They offer him kingship.
They do.
What a moment. I mean, he could have seized power, you know, established this dynasty. But Gideon understood something really important.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he understood that ultimately, God was the one in control.
He knew God was the true authority.
Yes.
His refusal to be king. I mean, it's such a contrast to what happens later.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
In Israel's history, it's a reminder, I think, of the dangers of unchecked ambition
yeah.
and the importance of humility in the face of God's sovereignty.
Yeah.
But even Gideon, this hero who resisted the temptation of power, he couldn't escape the pitfalls of human weakness.
You're talking about the ephod.
I am. Yeah. That whole thing in this tragic turn of events, he creates this ephod and it ends up leading the Israelites right into idolatry.
It's a sobering reminder mm-hmm. that even the most faithful among us can stumble and fall.
Yeah.
And it prompts us to ask, you know, how can someone who's experienced God's power so directly mm-hmm. end up making such a grave error?
Yeah.
What lessons can we glean from both Gideon's triumphs and his failings?
Big questions.
Yes. Big questions. And these are questions we can all contemplate as we continue to explore the lives of these judges.
Absolutely. And speaking of grappling with tough questions, that brings us to Jephthah and that infamous vow of his.
Ah, Jeph.
Yeah.
A figure whose story is often met with a mix of admiration and bewilderment.
Yeah. Jephthah, this outcast warrior who gets called on to lead Israel against the Ammonites.
Right.
He makes this rash vow to God.
He does.
In a moment of, I don't know, misguided zeal, maybe.
Perhaps. Yeah.
He's going to sacrifice the first thing that comes out of his house if God gives him victory. Talk about setting yourself up for a potentially devastating homecoming.
Yeah, it's a vow that hangs over the narrative.
Totally.
Creating this incredible sense of tension as he heads off to battle.
Oh, yeah. And as we know, the story takes this incredibly heartbreaking turn. Jephthah comes back victorious, only to be met by his daughter, his only child.
Rushing out to greet him.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a scene that forces us to confront some difficult truths about the ancient world and the the complexities of interpreting scripture.
Yes, it does.
You know, the lecture doesn't shy away from the traditional interpretation that Jephtha, in this tragic act of misguided faith, he fulfilled that vow and sacrificed his daughter. I mean, it's a text that a lot of people struggle with.
Yes, they do. And for good reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And the commentaries that are mentioned in the lecture seem to confirm this traditional understanding.
They do. Even Martin Luther stated quite bluntly that the text clearly indicates Jephtha did indeed offer up his daughter.
It's a chilling reminder that sometimes, even with the best of intentions, you know,
yes,
faith can be twisted and laid to just unimaginable tragedy. It raises questions about how we reconcile these difficult stories with our understanding of a loving God.
Mm-hmm.
What lessons can we possibly take away from Jephtha's heartbreaking mistake?
These are questions that require careful thought and sensitivity.
Yeah.
As we delve deeper into this challenging narrative.
For sure. Okay, everyone take a deep breath.
Okay.
Because now we're diving into the whirlwind that is Samson, this infamous strongman.
Yes, Samson.
His life was just this chaotic mix of passion and power.
Yeah.
And ultimately, tragedy.
Right.
It's a story that, you know, it elicits this mixed bag of reactions, right?
Uh-huh.
Amusement, confusion.
A bit of embarrassment.
Maybe even a bit of embarrassment. But Barry Webb, in his article, A Serious Reading of the Samson Story, he argues there's a lot more to this narrative than meets the eye.
He does, yeah.
So Webb breaks down Samson's story into three main movements.
Right.
First, you have this angel predicting Samson's birth.
Yeah.
To a barren woman.
Right.
And his destiny to deliver Israel.
From the Philistines.
From the Philistines, right.
Well,
and then the story unfolds in these two dramatic arcs, both showcasing this incredible strength and his, shall we say, complicated relationships with women.
Yes. He definitely wasn't known for making wise choices.
Not in the romance department?
No, not at all.
We've got, you know, his escapades in Timnah,
which
culminate in that, I mean, just epic slaughter at Ramoth Lehi, where he single-handedly takes down 1,000 Philistines with a donkey's jawbone.
Now that's a memorable weapon.
Right. And then there's the whole episode in Gaza with the harlot.
Right.
Followed by that final encounter at the Temple of Dagon.
Yes.
I mean, it's a story that is just filled with twists and turns.
Yeah.
But Webb encourages us to look beyond those more, I don't know, sensational aspects.
Right.
And consider this deeper meaning that's kind of woven throughout.
Oh.
One key element is Samson's identity as a Nazirite.
Yes. Someone set apart for God from birth.
Set apart. Okay. So for those who aren't familiar.
Yeah. A Nazirite was someone dedicated to God from birth with certain restrictions.
Okay.
Like not cutting their hair and drinking wine.
Okay.
It was a visible sign of their commitment to God.
Okay.
Oh.
So, but here's the irony.
Yes.
Samson's life constantly contradicts that Nazirite vow.
It does.
He touches dead bodies. He drinks wine.
Uh-huh.
He even lets Delilah cut his hair.
Yes.
Which was like the ultimate symbol of his consecration.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, Webb argues this contradiction. It's not just a plot device.
Yes.
It's central to understanding his story.
Yeah, he does. He does.
It's his reflection of Israel's own struggle with faithfulness.
Uh-huh.
So you're saying Samson's personal journey, it kind of mirrors this larger story of Israel's relationship with God.
Exactly. Both were chosen. Both were given a special calling.
Mm-hmm.
And both were prone to straying from that calling.
It's a reminder that even those who are set apart for God can be tempted by the allure of worldly desires.
And this parallel between Samson's choices and Israel's decline, I mean, it's even more apparent when you get to that double conclusion of Judges.
Right.
Right? Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. It's like the author's foreshadowing, right?
Yes.
This chaos that comes when people just abandon God's guidance and follow their own selfish desires.
Yeah. And that phrase, what is right in their own eyes, it echoes Samson's own words when he insists on marrying the Philistine woman.
Oh, wow.
It's as if the author is deliberately linking Samson's impulsive choices.
Okay.
With the larger downfall of the nation.
That's a really interesting connection. It suggests that Samson's story is more than just this tale of this strong man's adventures.
Yeah.
It's like it's a microcosm of Israel's struggle with obedience and the consequences of turning away from God.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's the dramatic irony of Samson's death.
Yeah.
The Philistines celebrate, attributing their victory to their god, Dagon.
Mm-hmm.
But in a twist, it's actually Yahweh, the God of Israel, who orchestrates the whole thing.
Wow.
Using Samson's demise to bring about their destruction.
It's this powerful reminder that God's plans are always in motion.
Yeah.
Even when we can't see the full picture.
That's right. That's right.
So to recap, I mean, some of the key things that Webb highlights, that contest between Yahweh and these false gods, the demonstration of God's sovereignty, and this idea that Samson's life reflects both Israel's history and even in a sense, our own journeys.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot to unpack. It definitely gives us a framework for understanding Samson on a much deeper level.
It does. Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting. As we're talking about Samson, one thing that really struck me, you know, in the sources is how he's actually listed as a hero of faith in the book of Hebrews.
Oh, yeah.
Which seems kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, he's impulsive.
Yeah.
He made some terrible choices, let his desires control him so often.
But it is a reminder, isn't it, that faith doesn't mean we'll always make perfect choices.
Yeah.
It's more about recognizing God as the ultimate authority in our lives.
Right.
Even when we mess up.
And it is encouraging, in a way, to see that even these heroes of faith were human.
Yeah.
Like us, they had weaknesses. They gave in to temptation.
Mm.
They experienced those, you know, moments of incredible courage, but also complete failure.
We often put, I think, biblical figures on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And forget that they face real struggles, just like we do.
Absolutely. So if Samson's story kind of mirrors Israel's journey.
Right.
And even our own walk, you know, with faith in a way.
Yeah.
What's the takeaway for us? What can we learn from this flawed but ultimately fascinating figure?
Well, I think one of the biggest lessons is that God can use us, even in our imperfections.
Yeah.
It goes back to that idea of embracing our calling,
right,
regardless of our flaws.
Like that passage in Exodus, right? Where God tells Israel to be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation.
Yes, yes. And that same call is echoed in the New Testament.
Yeah.
Where Peter describes Christians as a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation.
Right.
This idea of holiness, of being set apart for God's purposes,
mm-hmm,
it connects both the Old and New Testaments.
But how does that relate to Samson?
Yeah.
I mean, his life was anything but holy if you look at it from, like, you know, that traditional perspective.
Well, Barry Webb makes this point, and I think it really resonated with me.
Okay.
He says, true holiness isn't about isolating ourselves from the world or trying to be perfect.
Yeah.
It's about living in the world.
Yes.
But letting God work through us, even in our brokenness.
So it's about surrender, allowing God to kind of transform us.
Exactly, yeah. And that's where Samson's story becomes really interesting, because he was deeply flawed.
Right.
Made terrible decisions. But he still ended up playing this key role in God's plan for Israel's deliverance.
Right.
And it makes me think about those times when we feel inadequate, mm-hmm, or disqualified. Because of our past mistakes.
Yeah, because if God can use Samson, maybe there's hope for us too.
That's the beauty of grace, isn't it?
Yeah.
It tells us we don't have to be perfect,
right,
to be used by God. In
yeah.
fact, it's often in those moments of weakness that his strength shines through the most.
It's a good point. And speaking of weakness and strength, it's interesting you mentioned earlier about Samson kind of foreshadowing Jesus.
Yeah.
How do you see that playing out in his story?
Well, you think about it. Samson's birth was announced by an angel. His conception was miraculous. He was rejected by his own people.
Yeah.
And ultimately, his sacrifice led to the downfall of a false god and opened the door for future deliverance. All of these elements resonate with the life of Jesus.
Yeah, there are definitely parallels there. I mean, of course, Jesus, he embodies perfect faithfulness and sacrifice.
Right.
So it makes the comparison a bit complex.
Right. But I think it's less about drawing a perfect one-to-one comparison.
Right.
And more about recognizing those echoes of God's redemptive power at work.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of these messy, flawed human lives.
It's like God saying, look what I can do through someone like Samson.
Yeah.
Now imagine what I can do through you.
Right. Exactly. It's a message of hope and possibility.
Yeah.
For those of us who struggle with our own imperfections.
Now, as we move toward wrapping up our deep dive into Judges, we can't ignore those final chapters. You know, those chapters that paint a pretty bleak picture of Israel's decline.
Yeah.
You know, you have the story of Micah and his private sanctuary.
Right.
Complete with idols and a hired priest.
Yeah.
And then that horrifying account of the Levite's concubine and the civil war that follows.
Yeah.
These are tough, tough stories to read.
They are.
Just filled with this violence.
Yeah.
And a sense of hopelessness that's that's hard to shake.
They really highlight the consequences of what happens when a society abandons its moral compass.
Right.
And everyone just decides, well, what's right in my own eyes?
And that phrase, it pops up again and again in those final chapters.
Uh-huh.
Like this chilling reminder, what happens when God is no longer that ultimate authority?
Yeah. It's almost as if the author is deliberately juxtaposing those stories of decline.
Yeah.
With the heroic tales of the judges.
Yeah.
To show us that stark contrast.
Right.
Between a life lived in obedience to God.
Yeah.
And one that's driven by selfish ambition.
It feels incredibly relevant to our world today. I mean, we live in a culture that celebrates individualism, rejects this idea of absolute truth.
Right.
But the Book of Judges, I mean, it kind of shows us where that kind of thinking can lead.
It underscores our need for God's guidance, his wisdom, and his grace now more than ever.
So as we reflect on everything we've discussed, the cycles of sin and deliverance, the complex lives of these judges, and the reality of Israel's, you know, decline.
Yeah.
What does it all mean for us today? Why should we care about these ancient stories?
I think the Book of Judges offers us this timeless reflection on the nature of faith, leadership.
Yeah.
And the consequences of our choices.
Right.
It forces us to confront our own flaws.
Yeah.
And seek God's guidance in all aspects of our lives.
It's a reminder, right, that God can work through anyone.
Yeah.
Even those who seem completely unqualified to accomplish his purposes.
Yeah.
And it challenges us to really examine our own hearts and think about how we're living out our faith in the world today.
Yeah. It's a powerful testament to God's enduring faithfulness.
Right.
That even when his people stray, he never abandons them.
Right.
His grace is always there, ready to redeem and restore.
Okay. I think we've covered a lot of ground here.
What?
We've explored those cyclical patterns in judges, the complex lives of these judges, and the sobering reality of Israel's, you know, spiritual and moral decline.
Yeah, we have. We've encountered these flawed heroes, wrestled with some really difficult questions, and uncovered, I think, some profound truths about God's faithfulness and what it means to be human.
So what's the big takeaway? What's the one thing you hope listeners walk away with after this, you know, this whole deep dive?
Well, for me, it's that God's grace is bigger than our mistakes.
Yeah.
And no matter how flawed or unqualified we may feel, God can still use us to do amazing things if we surrender to his will and allow him to work in our lives.
Judges, it's like a roller coaster, right?
It is.
You get those incredible moments of triumph.
Yeah.
And then you're like, whoa, it's dark, this real failure. It's all woven together.
Yes, it is.
One thing that keeps coming up, especially as we've talked about, you know, Samson, Jephthah, it's this tension. God's faithful.
Uh-huh.
But then you see the human flaws.
Yeah.
Of those that he chooses to work through.
Yeah.
It really makes you wonder, why would God choose to use people?
Yeah.
Who make such questionable, I mean.
Yeah, it's a question theologians and believers have grappled with for centuries.
Right.
But maybe the answer's simpler than we think.
Okay.
Perhaps it's not about finding perfect vessels, but about God's willingness to work through cracked pots.
So it's not about us being perfect.
No.
But about letting God kind of mold us.
Yes. Mold and shape us even in our brokenness.
Right. And that's where grace comes in.
Yes. Grace is central to understanding the Book of Judges, I think.
Because even when they messed up.
They did.
Even when these judges, you know, made decisions that had devastating consequences.
Yeah.
God's grace was still there.
Yes, it was. And it wasn't about them earning it.
Right.
Or proving themselves worthy.
It was just there.
It's just there.
It's a radical idea.
Yes, it is.
I mean, when you think about it, God's love.
Yes.
It isn't dependent on our performance.
No.
Or our ability to get things right.
That's right.
It challenges, I think, how we often think about God's love, you know?
Yeah. We have to be good enough.
We have to earn it.
Earn it.
Be good enough. But Judges shows us a different side.
It does.
A God who chooses to work through, I don't know, messy, complicated people.
Yes.
Not despite their flaws, but often because of them.
That's right. That's right.
That brings us back to calling.
Yeah.
Something we talked about earlier, Exodus.
Yep.
God tells the Israelites, "You shall be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation."
Right.
It's this call to live differently.
Yes.
Set apart.
To be set apart, yeah.
And that call doesn't end with the Israelites, right?
No, it doesn't. Peter uses similar language in the New Testament.
Okay.
When he describes Christians as a chosen people, a royal priesthood.
Right. So this idea of holiness.
Yes.
This being set apart. It runs through, like, the whole thing.
The whole biblical narrative.
Yeah, the whole narrative. But how does that connect to Samson?
Yeah.
Or even Jephthah? I mean, their lives, they were far from what we think of as holy.
And that's the point, isn't it? Holiness isn't about outward perfection.
Right.
Or following a set of rules flawlessly.
Okay.
It's about this inward transformation.
Uh-huh.
About letting God shape our hearts and minds.
Yeah.
Even when the process is messy and unpredictable.
So maybe it's less about trying to be perfect and more about just surrendering.
Exactly. Yeah, it's about recognizing that we're all cracked pots in a way.
Yeah.
But God can still use us
mm-hmm.
to do incredible things.
Yeah.
If we allow him to fill us with his grace and power.
You know, as we've been kind of unpacking all this,
yeah,
it's made me think about how we focus on the failures.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
We talk about Samson's recklessness, Jephthah's vow,
yeah,
Gideon's ephod, but we forget about those incredible things they did.
That's true.
They were heroes too.
Yes, they were.
In their own kind of flawed way.
Yes. It's a good reminder that we shouldn't let their mistakes overshadow those moments of courage, of faith, of obedience that marked their lives.
And maybe that's a lesson for us.
Yeah.
We all make mistakes.
We do.
We all have those moments where we fall short.
Yes.
But that doesn't disqualify us from being used by God.
That's right.
In fact, it's often in those moments, right, of weakness that we realize how much we need him.
That's when his power can truly work in and through us.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Judges,
yeah,
I think the message I'm taking away is this. God's grace, it's always available.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't matter how messy things get.
No matter how messy our lives may be.
And he can use even the most unlikely.
The most unlikely.
Heroes.
To accomplish his purposes.
It's a message of hope.
Yes.
And possibility for all of us, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's a reminder that we don't have to have it all figured out.
No.
To be part of God's story.
And that his story, the story of redemption, restoration, I mean, it's still being written.
Yes, it is. Even today.
So keep seeking.
Yeah.
Keep exploring. And keep believing that God can use you just as you are
yeah.
to do amazing things in this world.